This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor, Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
A unique mix of world news and queer culture, Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12 on Joy 94.9.
Our first guest this morning is Rebecca Huntley, and Rebecca has written a piece, a quarterly essay, Australia Fair, Listening to the Nation. Good morning, Rebecca, and welcome.
Oh, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Look, it's a pleasure. It's, you know, this is an issue that fairness, it's an issue that actually we're dealing with in the show a little bit today. You're saying or asserting or stating that there's a lot of reactionary people on the outskirts, but you're saying there's a huge progressive centre. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, so I think one of the reasons why I wanted to write this essay and what compels a lot of my writing is that most of the time I'm a social researcher. So most of the time I spend listening to Australians rather than talking to the media. So I've met over the last 20 years Australians, you know, teenagers to 90-somethings all around the country. And I'm always struck about what we agree with is more dominant, is more present than what we disagree with. And there's a growing chasm between the conversations I'm lucky enough to hear in people's lounge rooms and workplaces and the conversation in some parts of the media and politics, which seems to be completely gridlocked on huge issues like climate change or racism or sexism or, you know, government spending and so forth. So I think that the value of fairness, the idea that everybody should have a fair go, or that, you know, we should live in a society where there aren't huge differences between the very wealthy and the very poor, all of those kinds of issues, there's a lot of agreement across the usual kinds of divisions of generation and geography, and increasingly who people vote for. There's a what I call a kind of unsilent majority that we can see. And we can see their values reflected not only in the research, but also potentially in the results of the ballot box.
Rebecca, it's Tess here. Good morning to you.
I
can't wait to read your essay. Quarterly essay for me is sort of essential reading, really.
Good.
So I'm looking forward to charging off to the bookshop to buy this later on today. What have you actually learned? I mean, we haven't got time to sort of go through the entire essay, but what are the sort of key salient points that came out of your research and that you wrote about? And in the context also that clearly the divide between the rich and the poor is getting larger and larger, and I get a sense that there is a larger disenfranchised sort of middle ground there. But I'd be interested in what you learned.
I think that's exactly right. And I spend quite a lot of time in the essay talking about what isn't often a very kind of sexy topic, which is housing. But I have to say, over the time of my being a researcher, the whole issue of access to housing has been something that, you know, people keep talking about again and again. And when I first started my research all those years ago, most people were like, okay, well, you know, we just need to give perhaps a first homeowner's grant and, you know, release a bit more, you know, land and build a bit more buildings, and the whole issue of access to housing will sort itself out. It really hasn't. And in fact, I've seen over that time a real transition. And again, it crosses over generations and class and all the rest of it, saying, you know, the difficulty people are having in accessing housing, and whether that's stable rental housing or being able to afford their own home. And interestingly, the issue of homelessness has become more and more prevalent, and people have seen that as a real cause of some of the inequality that we're talking about. Issues around housing for older Australians. If you don't own your own home by the time you're, you know, getting close to retirement, you're not going to. And being in the rental market as an older person is really, really difficult. And of course, we've seen lots of problems in relation to aged care as well, which is a different form of housing. So I've seen the Australian population go from thinking the market will sort itself out to thinking, no, we need a whole of government and quite interventionist approach to make sure that every Australian, no matter where they are, has a roof over their head. And that's the responsibility both of all levels of government and the community.
So, Rebecca, are you saying that government policy has particularly fueled this division?
It has. I think that people have seen some of the things that governments have tried to do in relation to housing being inadequate. So a really good example was the first homeowners grant that was given in various states. And at a time where people thought, well, all that did, it wasn't really necessarily always helping young people into the housing market. It was just making those kinds of homes...
More expensive.
Exactly, more expensive. Other people have said, look, we can't allow an issue as kind of central as being able to have security of your own, housing to property developers and landlords. They're there to make a buck. And so maybe government needs to create more incentive, but also more obligations to say, look, if you're going to, build a massive, housing complex, are you building the infrastructure around it to be able to make sure that that's a really livable area? Are you allowing some of that housing to be available at a lower cost so that people aren't driven out of the area that perhaps they lived in before? So I think that Australians are demanding more and more innovative policy options from all levels of government and requiring more involvement by government in this and saying we just can't leave it up to the market because the market is creating... not just a rise in homelessness, like visible homelessness, people talk about also the people who may not be living rough on the streets but might be moving, from boarding houses to people's couches and people living in their cars. They also talk about, there's nothing more discouraging than interviewing, as I did last year, two full-time working teachers in regional New South Wales, hard-working, well-educated, a young man and young woman, and they said, we'll never be able to own our own home. Mm. And,
Rebecca,
that itself seems like, well, what kind of Australia do we have if that's the case?
Are governments listening? Are governments listening to these concerns?
I think they are. None of the research that I draw on from the essay is hidden at all. It's either out on the public record or it's shared by the kinds of people I work for with government. We have seen the Federal Labor Party make some significant commitments in relation to affordable and social housing if they get into government. Lots of different state governments, including Victoria, are thinking about innovative ways to not just invest in public housing but provide affordable housing. I think the difficulty is a lot of these policies are slow-burn policies, right? It's not like something like, oh, we're going to give you a tax cut now, this requires building infrastructure. It requires involving and talking to corporate Australia and the private sector about investment options. So it is tricky. And of course, when it looks like there's all these other, when you're chasing the media cycle and having to deal with all these issues, perhaps something as not very sexy as housing policy falls off the agenda. But I think they are listening. It's just always what the people want is filtered through whatever the agenda of the political party is and the people in that party at the time.
We've seen, Rebecca, most recently Federal Labor's been talking about an increase in the minimum wage to try and, I don't think it'll ever completely eliminate...
But, well, to legislate, actually, maybe.
Yeah, but to try and eliminate the working poor.
Yep.
Now, the government... has said, even though I do recall what Matthias Cormann said, of course he's reinterpreted it, but basically saying that low wage outcomes were an integral part of the government's economic strategy. So on one side, the government is saying, well, we need to keep a lid on wages because someone's wage increases someone else's job. Well, that's like saying... all taxes go to paying for hospitals, which is rubbish. We know that. It's always an argument politicians use. Today, it's reported that Josh Frydenberg has said that in the budget, he's looking at ways, or he'll be looking at ways and doing things in the federal budget that will increase wages. So we've gone from the government, oh, no, you can't have a wage rise because that's someone else's job, to now, oh, we need to give you a wage rise, which will probably be a tax cut. You know, so perhaps they're hearing the message, but...
Playing it very differently, though, Mac.
Yeah, are they actually serious about addressing these issues? And I'm talking about all political parties. The issues of housing, the issues of a living wage, the, you know, education, healthcare, all these issues... I hear the same things that you're hearing from all the people you speak to, yet it seems to me we're still sort of, our governments, with rare exception, are fiddling at the edges.
Yeah, look, it's a really good point. And again, I think that, well, first of all, to your point about a living wage, I have to say that the Australians that I do research with are pretty understanding that they can't have it all. You know, we have had downward pressure on wages for a long time, and we've even had the governor of the Reserve Bank, you know, try and encourage corporate Australia to give pay rises, actually the other way, he was encouraging employees to ask for pay rises.
Yeah.
And I kind of at the time thought, well, we can ask, but actually it's more important to encourage employers to give the pay rises when they've been asked and it's justified. I think one of the things, the big message I get is not so much that there's downward pressure on wages, it's that in certain levels there's upward pressure on certain costs. And one that's been particularly singled out is private healthcare insurance. That's one thing that is an issue with people. Obviously, energy costs in the past have been something. So there is this kind of combination of rising costs in some areas and wages either flat or going down. And so I think that one of the things that is difficult for governments is to explain to people where the levers that they can push in policy are actually effective or not. You know, so I don't think that the government can do much about the cost of milk, but I think it can do something about the policy frameworks around things like cost of healthcare broadly, both public and through private health insurance. So, but that requires, you know, I think almost in this kind of environment, a Herculean task of political communication, which is pretty hard to do. So that's why I think we often get these mixed messages. You know, the government is clearly, federal government is clearly hearing messages that people are concerned about their wage, and also concerned about the fact that there's a lot of insecure and part-time work available, but secure full-time work is becoming rarer. So that's when you have them say things like, well, if we give a tax cut to business, that's going to create jobs and that's going to lift wages. And people are generally pretty cynical about that.
Rebecca, we could talk about this all day.
Feel we're settling in.
We are now. And I'm going to read the essay, and I'd love you to come into the studio and we can really unpack it.
That would be a lot of fun. And I'd love to answer any questions that people have as well, talk back. So you have me on again.
We will.
Absolutely.
Just the tip of the iceberg.
It is.
Good on you. Thank you for coming into the studio.
Hi, this is John Borghetti, the CEO of Virgin Australia. Just like Joy 94.9, we are flying high and proud.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.